those of the host and guests, and are not necessarily those of the...
This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. But please hold your calls at least for a couple of minutes until we see if we're going to have our special guest with us this evening. That's going to be Liz McIntyre. We're going to be talking about, of course, the effort to identify everybody, to track everybody. You know, we found out recently that if you have a cell phone, why, even if it's turned off, they can listen to you. Those microphones have been in there for a long time. In fact, your regular telephone, you don't have to pick it up. They don't have to listen that way. There is a built-in. They can actually listen to it, even if it's just sitting on your table. I've been told this by people who have connections to intelligence. They've had this ability to track people for a long time because, you see, they're people with a different worldview. They want to be able to track everybody, to watch everybody. The one thing they fear is resistance to their plan for the New World Order, the New World Religion. And so increasingly we're talking about putting chips into certainly our various products, chips in the cars. In fact, if you have a car with General Motors, a car with a global positioning in it, they can listen to your conversations in your car. Not only track your car with a global positioning satellite, but actually listening to what you say in their car. All of these things seem so incredible. How could these things be going on today? Well, because there are people who look at the world differently than you and I do. They march to a different drumbeat. They hear the sound of a different trumpet. They dream a different dream. And those of you who are not acquainted with my work on the Brotherhood of Darkness, you really need to get my book and read it. And then, of course, you need to listen to our programs talking about the coming war with Iran, and we're going to be putting together a series of programs on that. Everything we're getting from the people we know and trust suggests that the administration has already made a plan to go to war with Iran. In fact, that's what the attack on Iraq was really all about. I mean, there's no way that our government could have done as poor a job in Iraq as they have unintentionally. I mean, here it took 695,000 troops during the first Gulf War simply to chase Saddam Hussein's troops out of Kuwait, and yet somehow we're supposed to believe that the military was going to be able to take and occupy and fight a guerrilla war in Iraq with only 160,000 troops. The military wanted to do it right. They've been blocked at every turn by the elite who really run things and to whom the military are answerable. It's like Vietnam all over again. The military could have won the war in Vietnam. They weren't allowed to, and they haven't been allowed to win the war in Iraq. Why? Because the target was never Iraq. It was always Iran. I mean, Iraq was a basket case. We'd been bombing Iraq on a regular basis for for 9 years. We'd been bombing it 3 or 4 times a week. There was no way they were going to be able to resist America coming in. America, of course, was able to move in very, very quickly. But, of course, as soon as we got in, we did everything wrong. We disbanded the military. We disbanded the police. We disbanded the civil service. We closed down all of the government-run factories so there'd be no jobs for the people. We invested all sorts of money on reconstructing, and it never got done. And we'll be right back here with our special guest. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and right now we have with us on the line certainly one of my favorite guests, and I'm sure you're one of your favorite guests as well, Liz McIntyre. Hi, Liz. How are you doing?
I'm fine, Dr. Stan. How are you?
Doing fine. And, of course, for those of you who don't know, Liz and Catherine Elbrecht speak on this RFID chipping. They want to chip everything. They want to chip your clothing, everything you buy, everything you wear. Our animals, our domestic animals, they certainly want to chip every farm animal. Why do you think they want to chip everything, Liz?
Well, I think it depends on what level you're talking about. I think at the very upper levels, it's all about control. It's about money and power. I mean, that's what it all boils down to. It's been a theme throughout history, and it's continuing today.
I think you're absolutely right. But at the lower level, I mean, of course, what is their rationale? They've got to tell us common people, you know, they've got to give us an excuse for what they're doing, because they don't want us to realize what the game is. So what do you think they're telling the common people?
Well, I think the average person, and even the people who are involved at the lower levels, and I say lower levels, you know, people who are engineers working on this technology, I mean, they really don't have any ill will toward any of us, and they think they're just doing a job, and they're just going to be tracking packages and widgets, you know, from point A to point B in warehouses without ever tracking people. But, of course, in our book Spy Chips, as you know, we reveal that there's quite a different agenda out there. And really, every one of us is going to be a target at some point.
And I think the people who think that, well, you know, if I just keep my head down and don't make too large a profile, why, they'll leave me alone. Do you think that's going to be true?
Well, they'll leave you alone because you'll just be one of the masses, and, you know, you'll be, hopefully not, but could be encouraged to one day pay homage, you know, or be forced to pay homage and to toe the line, because this technology, combined with other technologies we have, could really control buying and selling in the marketplace, control our food sources at some point, control our ways of making a living and surviving.
And I think you're absolutely right. And how is the book doing? Is it getting a pretty good reception?
Well, it has. In fact, well, you know, our hardcover edition came out in October of 2005. It did so well that it was translated into Spanish. It is in the Spanish language market now. It's spreading. We have a version for the Christian market, of course, that went out there. And then Penguin Plume, very well-known publisher, bought the rights to the hardcover edition of our book and now has it out in paperback. It came out back in October. And, you know, even a year and a half later, the book obviously is doing very well.
Hold that thought right there. We'll
sure.
Be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Liz McIntyre, who, along with Catherine Albrecht, has written a book called Spy Chips. And the book is really doing very well now. It's available in Spanish. Penguin has bought the rights to the book and is getting it out. And, of course, I asked Liz the question, what is this really about? And she says, well, it depends on what level you're at. You know, at your lower level, probably most people just think they're doing a job and it's going to be a convenient means to track packages and make it easier for, you know, to track various things and buying things at convenience. But at the top, at the upper echelon, behind the scenes, it's all about power and control over the population. Those are the people who are really, of course, pushing this whole agenda. And Elizabeth was just saying the book really has been doing very, very well. And people are learning, becoming aware of the fact that there is this other agenda behind what's going on today. Have you gotten very much into this idea of putting these RFID chips into all animals, farm animals?
Yes. In fact, I'm going to be at a rally in Austin, Texas, on March 2nd, Texas Independence Day, where we're all going to get together and say no to NAIS, National Animal Identification System. Of course, that's it's a horrible, horrible step forward by the industry to tag and track every living beast. I mean, everything except maybe even your cat in some cases would have to be chipped. I mean, pet birds, cows, goats, people step onto your property where you have an animal, there's got to be reporting. It's just an onerous burden. It's going to put a lot of small farmers in a very disadvantageous position. It will run many out of business. And, of course, it just allows the big producers who are really pushing for the technology to get an even greater advantage. And it's also problematic in that, once again, it's a way to control our food supply.
And certainly this is something that most people are totally unaware of. There is this organized effort, and has the legislation actually gone through yet?
What it is, it's going through state by state. They're not doing it. I mean, it is being promoted by the USDA at the federal level, but every state is deciding how to adopt this national animal identification system. And, of course, they're getting money from the government, and it's really hard to turn money away when you don't have a lot of money to begin with, you know, at the state level to run programs. And so state by state, it's being brought up and being implemented. But I will tell you, the farmers are fighting a valiant fight, and they're not letting it go through. In fact, in Texas, it was set to be instituted, and it was pushed back again and again. I mean, people are really not going to go for it, I think, in Texas at the very least.
And, I mean, certainly every cow is going to have one of these things. We used to have brands, but now they're going to have to, what are they going to do, put some sort of a tag onto the ear? Is that how it's going to work?
Well, you know, it depends. It's not, right now, RFID, what we talk about, you know, those radio tags that can be tracked from a distance, are not necessarily mandated, although in order to work with the system that's been set up, if you have any number of animals, I mean, it's going to be necessary to have that. There's no way you can keep up with all the paperwork that would be involved without something like that. So we think that's where it's ultimately going. But, you know, Dr. Stan, many of your listeners may have heard the news out there. There are some new technologies coming forward. In addition to these implantable chips that can go into the flesh of the cow or clipped onto the ear of the cow, there's a new electronic tattoo of sorts by a company called SoMark. They have a patent for this, and what it is chipless RFID. It's actually a tattoo with metallic-type pieces that are inserted into the flesh, and it's sort of a brand. It can either be visible or an invisible brand, and can be read from a distance. And, of course, not only could this be put in cows, it could be put in people, too.
Well, now, of course, would this then be read from a distance, or would this be read by a satellite? I mean, how sophisticated is this?
Well, you know, when you talk about that, I mean, even if you have a short read range, if you have these devices that can scan these from a distance, can read them, those devices can be connected to a network, and other devices can be connected to a satellite. So don't let the read range fool you. You know, if you have one of these reader devices every few feet, which is really the plan, it doesn't matter if it's being, you know, this tag is being read directly by a satellite, because certainly that information can be conveyed as fast as you snap your fingers.
And, of course, what they want to do is regulate and control everything. This is why they're putting up so many video cameras every place, so they can watch you. This is why they certainly have the microphones in your cell phone, that you don't have to be listening to your cell phone. You don't even have to have it turned on. They can listen to you. And, of course, why? Because they want to track everyone, and it's so hard for the average individual to believe that could really be going on today. What sort of response do you get when you first start talking to people about the RFID chips that they want to put into our clothing, and they want to put into our tires, and they want to put into literally everything that we buy at the major stores?
Well, you know, at first, people thought it was just a paranoid conspiracy theory. In fact, I was sort of, when I first heard about it, thought, well, there's no way. But then when you see it in black and white, it hit the Patent and Trademark Office, I mean, a sworn public document, and you go to these meetings like I have been, and you hear people gleefully talking about tracking people, you realize it's all too true. And I think that thanks to people like you, Dr. Stan, spreading the word, people are hearing about it now. And so when you talk to them, they realize now it's really serious business. It's not just some fairy tale.
Well, of course, we can justify that, oh, we're involved in a war on terrorism, and, you know, certainly we want to know who the terrorists are. That's why we have to, you know, put a chip, attach a chip somehow to every law-abiding citizen. For instance, they want to put the RFID chips into our new driver's license, which will become a national ID card. Is that going ahead?
Well, of course, back in 2005, the Real ID Act was passed, which gives the Department of Homeland Security the power to set federal driver's license standards. Now, they haven't come out with what those standards are yet, but every state would be required to have the same information on the driver's license. And so, in effect, with or without RFID, that becomes a de facto national ID card. Now, it becomes even more frightening if you consider that RFID could easily be slapped in there, because then not only do you have a national ID, you have a remotely readable national identification card. And anyone with the right reader device could scan you, potentially, as you drive by at 55 miles an hour, as we've seen the Department of Homeland Security looking for beefed-up RFID that can do just that.
And, of course, we see lots of times, for instance, if there are toll roads, there will be always an area where a car can go through. Why? Well, there's some sort of a reader on that car, and they can just they can read that, and then they can bill that car. They do this a lot of times at airports if they have a fee for a taxi coming in. And so then at the end of the month, they get a bill, depending upon how many times that they've been through there. Well, let me just play the devil's advocate. Liz, you know, what's wrong? I mean, why would any law-abiding citizen have to worry about, you know, having an RFID? So everybody did have their papers, they had their identification card. Why should law-abiding citizens be concerned just because now the government can track them?
Well, for one thing, we need a certain private space in order to have our freedom and develop the thoughts that we have and explore new ideas. I mean, that's the beauty of being in our country, the freedom to think and feel and explore without, you know, being shackled by oversight. Excuse me, I've got a cold. I didn't want to cough there.
Oh, that's not fine. I think most people have a little cold right about this time.
I know. I may have to reach for a cough drop here, so forgive me if I start coughing. But we all need that free space. Let me say that if we don't have that space, we know someone's looking over our shoulder, we're going to act very differently. I mean, if we know the people in power don't agree with a certain viewpoint, we may, excuse me, stray from that. Dr. Stan, I'm sorry.
Are you doing all right there, Liz?
I'm okay for a moment.
Why don't you just go ahead and get that cough drop, and here I'll talk, and you just interrupt me when you get back here, okay?
All right.
Okay, Liz is going to get herself a cough drop. And the thing is that down through the centuries, there have always been tyrants who wanted to control people. In fact, if you read the Old Testament, you find that the Lord told David not to number his people. But he wanted to number everybody there and act against God's instructions and, of course, incur the disfavor of God. At the time when Jesus was born, why? You know, everybody had to go to the city of their family so that they could be taxed and numbered. Everybody was numbered at the time, the Romans, and of course that's why Mary and Joseph had to go to Bethlehem. That was where the family had come from. Everything was controlled in any tyrannical system. America was different. America was the most wonderful country. We were a country where the power of the federal government was to be limited, and men were to be free. The whole idea was that, declared in our Declaration of Independence, where it said that, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men were created equal and endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these were life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And to secure these rights, these God-given rights, governments were instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed. So we had God-given rights. Government didn't give us all rights. They were God-given, and the power of the government was to be limited so men could be free. What people do not understand, and of course you'll be going into more of this later on, that from the very inception of our country, there have always been other people who had a different worldview. And that is, they wanted to control everything. Of course, initially, they wanted to use the financial and military power of the United States to bring everybody in the world under control. All governments, in fact, this was the basis of the world revolution that began with the American Revolution, the French Revolution, the revolutions that followed, overthrowing existing governments and monarchies, and then, of course, bringing about this new authoritarian rules all across the world under the guise of democracy. you know, where, of course, there'd be two candidates that control both of them, and it really didn't matter whether you got candidate A or candidate B, why, their candidate always won. But always increased centralization of power with government. The exact antithesis of the American dream, where the power of the central government was to be limited by the change of the Constitution, for as Thomas Jefferson had said so well, in matters of politics, speak not to me of confidence in men, but bind them down for mischief with the change of the Constitution. And as John Locke said, that government governs best, that governs the least. Well, Liz, are you feeling better?
Dr. Stan, I'm back.
Okay.
And I think there was a reason for that cough, because I couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you so much.
Well, you go right ahead. Well, God works in strange and strange and mysterious ways. I've never quite understood them, but I have to look to him lots of times for help in what we do. So certainly you go ahead and pick up the story. You're talking about this how really they want to put the RFID chip into our... at least didn't talk about putting it into our into our driver's license. I suppose that'll be a state-by-state basis. But what about the federal government? Are they encouraging that? Certainly they're encouraging putting this into our passports.
They already are putting it into our passports. And, of course, not only are they putting it into our passports, now have you seen the new tightened passport restrictions?
Yes, I have.
So, you know, not only are you going to... be tracked with RFID and have all your travel information in a database, there's going to be even more of it, because now when you come back from South America or from other countries, you've got to now show your passport, so there's a complete record of your entering and leaving.
Now, of course, some people say, well, I'm going to, you know, inactivate my RFID chip. Is there any way of doing that? Is there any way of doing it legally? And if you did have an inactivated RFID chip, would you even be able to get into the country?
Now, that's very interesting, because some passports are still good without RFID for approximately 10 years, because I believe that's the length that they're good typically when they're issued. And so there are going to still be some passports, many passports, without RFID for quite some time. And there hasn't been a challenge to the RFID yet. Supposedly, they've devised the U.S. passports so that an attempt to disable a chip would invalidate the passport somehow, ruin it. And I really don't have an answer to that. Some people have said just a zap of electric energy, not enough to cause a burn, but just enough to disable a chip could work. But I don't know what that would mean to the traveler.
All right, fine. Well, I suspect that you wouldn't be traveling very far.
I suspect that too.
The thing is that the people who are doing this know exactly what they're doing. And you say, well, who are these vague people you talk about? Well, I just suggest you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and you'll know exactly who they are. And we name many of them in my book. And it's all there. And if you want the documentation, of course, I mean, there are well over 100 various sources of information, and it's a rather short book. And so the information is all there. It's just a matter of people taking the time to check it out and find if it's really true. There really are people who do dream a different dream, because they worship a different God. Well, anyway, as we get into the background of the RFID, Walmart was one of the big advocates of this, putting it into clothing. Have they ever gone forward with that, or is it primarily being used to track, say, cartons and boxes?
Well, primarily cartons and boxes still, because they're still very afraid of a public backlash. Most places are. And, of course, they're not really telling us what their plans are going forward. However, we have found some spy-chipped, we call them spy chips, of course, spy-chipped products in their electronics department, including chipped Hewlett-Packard printer scanners, Sanyo TV set boxes, and some Lexmark printer scanners. We've been told that some other larger items that would also be considered the case level, as well as item level, will have tags. Now, Walmart has said they will put a symbol on the boxes of those products that are chipped, and it will have the initials EPC on the label. It stands for Electronic Product Code. And
hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I was simply asking Liz. Walmart was one of the biggest advocates of this initially, and they wanted, of course, to have these chips in clothing, just about everything you bought. But And then, of course, there was sort of an outcry that was created by Catherine and by Liz McIntyre. And so Walmart has sort of backed away from that after all. They don't want the public to understand that they are part of this, what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness, that wants everything regulated, everything so that it can be watched and tabulated. And, of course, it would make it so convenient to checking out at the check stand that you wouldn't even have to necessarily go through. They could just read everything you had. And, of course, the one thing that always bothered me about that is, Liz, you know, this whole idea that they could read everything at the check stand, but what happened if you were wearing underwear that you'd bought previously? Would they bill you for it again, or would they actually be able to know that you'd bought this previously? It sounds like this is so sophisticated they would know when you bought it and who you were just as you walked up to the check stand.
Exactly. That's the plan. I mean, every item on planet Earth would have a unique identification number. It would be like a social security number for things with no repeats. I mean, they can label trillions and trillions of objects with no repeats in their system. And so, yes, they would know that if you've already purchased the item when you come into the store, they know who purchased the item, when, potentially many, many other bits of information. And, of course, because this is all in a database, it could link to unlimited information, financial information, where you live, you name it. I mean, it's virtually unlimited what they can do with this.
In fact, I was really so interested when Catherine started doing the work. It was with the cards, or the Safeway cards, or the various discount cards that people get at the grocery stores, which everybody thought, gee, isn't it wonderful? They like me so much. If I just get this card, I get a special discount. Well, that really wasn't what it was all about at all, was it?
Absolutely not. Those cards don't save people money. And study after study, I mean, the Wall Street Journal did its own study in five different states at supermarkets, proving that you pay more on average, sometimes quite a bit more, at stores with the cards than the stores that don't have the cards. They jack up the prices on items, and then they put them for sale. It's just a big gimmick, and they really aren't being nice to all of us. They're really trying to find out more about us than even our own mothers have a right to know.
And in fact, I think what was so interesting, that basically whatever you bought became part of a gigantic database, and they would then be able to keep that for themselves or sell it to other people. And there was even one story about some fellow who slipped and fell in one of the stores, and of course he ended up hurting himself seriously. He wanted to sue, but they had records that he'd bought alcohol in the stores, and they were to use that at the trial. I mean, I don't know when he'd bought the alcohol, but they had that record, and they were able to bring that up. They know everything, and they're keeping track of everything you buy. And, of course, it's all there, and they can even sell that to other people, can't they?
They absolutely can, and it's really frightening. Not only can they sell it to other retailers, but our own government is collecting so much data from the private marketplace. Well, they could never collect it themselves. They could never knock on your door, Dr. Stan, and say, Dr. Stan, we want the last 5 years of your credit card records or your last 5 years of what you've purchased in the grocery store. You know, they could never do that. But when the private enterprise collects it, they can go with immunity and get that from them or buy it from them and mine it, which is what they're doing.
And of course you say, but why would they want to do that? I'm a law-abiding citizen.
Well, of course, they want to identify persons of interest. Now, we can all guess who the persons of interest might be right now, but we never know who those persons of interest are going to be in the future. And so all of us should be very careful about forking over our data without thinking. I would avoid those shopper cards completely. Please shop at stores that don't take those. I know it costs more if you don't use the cards in the stores, but find some way around it if you can. And certainly when you buy things, think twice before using a credit card, because a credit card can also give away quite a bit of information and paint quite a detailed picture of your purchases.
And, of course, why would you be worried? Well, the president has said, if you're not with us, you're against us. Well, wait a minute now. Certainly we don't have to be in favor of the terrorists. I don't think anybody's in favor of the terrorists, but there are many people who are very concerned about the fact that the president is taking all sorts of power unto himself that were not granted by the Constitution, and has simply told members of Congress that he will make the decision about whether we go to war with Iran. He will make the decision about increasing the troops over there. Doesn't matter how the American people think. He is going to surge the troops in Iraq, and of course he is bringing all sorts of very, very sophisticated naval forces and all sorts of other forces, Patriot missiles, certainly in preparation for an attack on Iran. Said, and the president has said, if you're not with us, you're against it. Well, if you don't agree, maybe they're going to start watching you. Would they begin collecting dossiers on American citizens? And I would point out that they are. They have the ability through Project Echelon, E-S-C-H-A-L-O-N, to listen to everybody's telephone calls. They've been doing it for 25 years, and the fact you've never heard it shows how effective they are in controlling what you think. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Liz McIntyre, and Liz has certainly been on the front lines of this battle to try to get people to understand that freedom is not free. And down through the ages, whether it be the time of the ancient kings, the kings of Israel like David, or during the time of the Roman Empire, or right up into the present time, there are always people who want to control other people. And right now, of course, we have the electronic technology to create a situation where you will neither buy nor sell unless you wear the mark of the beast or be known by the number of his name. And Liz, I understand that you have actually two books of spy chips, one for Christians and one for non-Christians. What's the difference?
Well, actually, we look at this connection with RFID and the last book of the Bible, the book of Revelation. And, of course, as you mentioned in there, it talks about a time when people will not be able to buy or sell unless they have a mark. Many, many Christians think, wow, you know, RFID can be implanted in the body. And, of course, in Revelation it talks about a mark in the hand or forehead, right? And it talks about this number. And, of course, RFID can be numbered. And it is a technology that really could control the marketplace, force you to authenticate yourself as you walk in the doors of a store, differentiate between what you can and cannot buy, right? Possibly not allow you into a place where you could sell without, you know, showing that particular mark. Now, we never call RFID the mark of the beast. We never would do that because I think it's going to be very clear when that happens, and it's not very clear now. But certainly, most people can see that connection, people who have read the book of Revelation.
And, of course, then you would have one thing for Christians because they would look at the world differently. Certainly Christians do have a different worldview than non-Christians, and just as the people who are imposing all of these ideas on us, I mean, have put together Project Echelon, and look it up. If you can find it on the Internet. They listen not only to every call, read every email and fax here in the United States. They read them all throughout the world. It's all done by computers. They can actually, with the computers, scan them. They scan for specific words, and then if there's something suspicious, then, of course, they can look at them. It's all done by the NSA, the National Security Administration, or agency, the National Security Agency. NSA also, of course, stands for No Such Agency. They've denied for years it exists. It's the most secret of all of our organizations, much larger, much more well-funded than the Central Intelligence Agency. In fact, we carry a book called NSA Big Brother is Watching You, and ladies and gentlemen, he really is. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Liz McIntyre. And Liz, certainly we carry your book, Spy Chip, because we think it's an important book. But would you like to tell our listeners where your website, how they can get the information that you have compiled?
Well, sure. We have a website at www.spychips.com. That's spychips with an S on the end. And there you can see some pictures of these devices we're talking about tonight. And also read a little bit more about what the technology is about. We have a link to the first chapter of our book. If you look at the very top of the home page, you'll see a link to a page about our book. And you can read the foreword to the book that was written by Bruce Sterling, who many of your readers and listeners may know about. He's a very famous wire technology commentator as well as an author.
All right, fine. So we recommend the book. If you're interested in getting it, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. This is amazing technology. And, of course, really, of course, it makes it so much easier to actually track boxes You don't have to read the numbers. You can just get your little meter or whatever it is, and they'll tell you what the box number is. And here's how then they're able to track these tremendous numbers of boxes moved from one area to another. Are they using these at all on the boxes of the shipments coming in from communist China?
You know, I think they're using them on all kinds of things, and of course we aren't really being told the full extent of their use. But yes, I've seen a lot of reports. They're very interested in using them, of course, overseas, because that gives them a little bit more control over their suppliers and tracking, of course, those widgets as they travel over the oceans.
Well, of course, are the people who are doing this concerned? Because there are a lot of foolish Americans who are concerned about this. You know, I mean, the common people don't like this idea of being numbered, and the people who want to do the numbering certainly don't. You know, they don't want to alarm the people out there. Have you run into the fact that they really are trying to sort of squash this, ridicule and demean people who are pointing out the potential threat of this?
Oh, of course, and we have, a hilarious section in our book, the public relations section, which is how this industry is trying to push this over consumers. They're trying to come up with all kinds of plans to tell people how great this is going to be for them and to bypass any concerns. And one of their tactics, of course, has been to ridicule people like us who bring up the privacy and civil liberties dangers. And we sort of give them their comeuppance a little bit there. And open some eyes. I think your listeners would really enjoy reading the book. And, you know, talking about misinformation campaigns about the technology, I don't know if you saw the recent story about the Canadian coins being bugged.
Why don't you tell us about that?
This is an interesting story that came out a couple of weeks ago. There were some defense contractors here from the United States that traveled to Canada, obviously to do some business up there with some sensitive high-tech, you know, you have to have security clearance type of business. And they came back to the United States, and reportedly on at least three occasions, these American contractors found RFID embedded coins, Canadian coins, on their person. And this came up, we know, because it was in an official United States government report. And this came out in the newspaper, like I said, a couple weeks ago, that it was in this report. And it said, quote, on at least three separate occasions between October 2005 and January 2006, cleared defense contractors, employees traveling through Canada have discovered radio frequency transmitters embedded in Canadian coins placed in their persons. Now, the reporter who followed up on this was told that the details of these coins was classified, nothing would be shared. But, of course, people were saying, well, this is horrible. I mean, everyone's going to be looking at the coins in their pockets. If you can slip this technology into coins, you know, how can we be safe from this? It just proves that this is a spying technology.
Well, of course, they would defend it in the name of national security, because we can't have Osama bin Laden or Mullah Omar or any of the members of Al-Qaeda, knowing what our technology is. Then they might be able to figure means of circumventing it, or maybe... Maybe they just don't want the American people to know the truth.
Well, they don't want the American people to know. This was buried in a Defense Security Service report, an official report that was declassified, and who would have ever thought that average Americans would get a hold of it? Well, a reporter did spot this and brought it to everyone's attention. It was confirmed, by the way. It was confirmed that it was a true story. And then, what happens? A week later, it was all denied. Somehow, it got into that report in error. And it just baffles the mind. It's sort of like George Orwell's 1984, where suddenly information history didn't happen.
Yeah, I think they used the term, it went down the memory hole.
The memory hole. That's right.
I hope every one of our listeners will get George Orwell's 1984 out and read it. You should read it about every 2 or 3 years, because you're seeing it laid out today. Eric Blair, of course, George Orwell, I believe, actually had a lot of information in that channel to him. And, of course, it is truly a prophetic book, understanding exactly what was to take place in the years 2007 and 2008, a little later in 1984. But the same technology, the same purpose, is the same goal. As O'Brien said, a boot stamping on a human face forever. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here at 464-8295. If you have a question for Liz, certainly she's on the front lines of this battle, and they have all sorts of great information that you won't find elsewhere. We're really indebted to Liz and her partner, Catherine, for, you know, getting this information together for us. And you've been at this how long, gathering the information?
Oh, it's been, what now, 4 years or so?
And, of course, you've got some help. I know there's some of the people there, at least in the agricultural industry, who are very upset about this whole idea of tagging the animals and tagging the chickens. And, I mean, the things that the demands that they're going to be making on the farmers are just so outlandish. And yet, of course, the threat of draconian prison terms and draconian fines, and my goodness, if one of your animals was to escape and you don't report it within 24 hours, or you slaughter a chicken or something without letting them know, why, of course, terrible things can be done to you. Well, maybe if you don't take your chickens off your farm, but what happens if one of them were to escape your farm? Why, of course, the government wants to know where every chicken is, where every goat is, where every lamb and every cow, even the horses, they want to know where they are as well. I mean, what makes you think that the government, which can lose literally tens of billions of dollars there in the Defense Department and trillions of dollars in the Defense Department, and can't even figure out where their money is, what makes you think that they really are interested in knowing where all these animals are, the Agricultural Department? There's no way they can keep track of them all. But what they want to do is intimidate the people, basically control them. And they want to really, I really think this is all about controlling the food supply. Is that your take on this, Liz?
Yeah, and you know, it's not just coming from the RFID angle and from the animal angle, but of course there have been moves to control herbal medicines, for example. I mean, valid, you know, remedies that people might take to help themselves. I believe that there's been a move in Europe, and I hear it's here. Have you heard about that, Dr. Stanley?
Oh, yeah, sure, because they want to limit the doses of various vitamins and minerals to something so ridiculously low, because, of course, there are too many people in the world. If they can take away their ability to get adequate nutrition and nutritional supplements, they can do immeasurable harm to the health of our people. Of course, they say, well, no, we're here to help. Well, ladies and gentlemen, for 50 years, they encouraged smoking. They did absolutely nothing to stop smoking. Certainly, the most frequent cancer today in women is no longer breast cancer, but lung cancer, thanks, of course, to the American Tobacco Company, with the help of the American government, got women smoking about 50 years ago. Now, of course, so many of them are dying of lung cancer. They knew exactly what was going to happen. And they even put a little announcement on the cigarette package that said, cigarettes are hazardous to your health. Why? Not to discourage you from smoking, but to protect the tobacco company from lawsuits. An incredible scam, but people find it so difficult to believe that anything could be truly that diabolical. Well, certainly I agree with Liz. I think that they want to track all the food. In fact, recently we've heard of the spinach conspiracy, and here in a nation of 300 million people, two children died from eating infected spinach. And night after night, week after week, we heard about contaminated spinach.
It's crazy. Well, you know, I heard a report on mainstream news the other night. They're trying to prime us for controlling even things like aspirin, things we take for granted that are over the counter. They're talking about stricter FDA regulations over things like that because they say we could all hurt ourselves. Well, I don't know about you, Dr. Stan. You're a medical doctor. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's ridiculous. I think that when it becomes a function of government to keep all men from their folly, they will have a race of fools and a race of slaves.
Well, I went into the drugstore the other day because, as you can tell, I have a pretty bad cold here. I'm trying to shake. And I went in to buy some medicine that's over the counter. Well, a lot of the things I used to take, I have to go to the pharmacy with a little card to authenticate myself. So I just passed those by. So I picked something up that was just on the shelf that I could take to the front register, which I did. And I go to the front register when I usually try to pay cash, which I had cash in my pocket for this. And they ring up the purchases and they go, okay, what's your birth date? I said, what do you mean my birth date? We need to have your birth date. I said, why? And they said, well, because so many people take these things and they create other drugs with them.
Although you must be getting something like Sudafed, something like that.
Yeah, it was something like that. Something, you know, that had taken for years, and I was like so shocked, I didn't know what to say.
Yeah, they make methamphetamine out of it.
Right, which you know, I understand, but I mean, I was pretty obviously, Dr. Stanton, you've probably seen pictures of me. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not 17 or 18. And even if I'm 45, what's going to prevent from doing something bad with it anyway?
Well, of course, the thing is that basically they have all these rules and regulations to try to protect our people, and more of them are getting onto drugs, and we have so many people smoking pot, and we have so many people using cocaine, and we have so many people using heroin, and of course now they're worried about speed. Oh yes, we're from the government, we're here to help, and well, don't get me started on who's really behind the drug smuggling and who wants to corrupt our society. Anyway, but if you'd like to, you know, get more information on that, we have a 4-tape set called "Is There Really a War on Drugs?" Is there really a war on drugs? Or the book "Kiss the Boys Goodbye," suppressed for many years, but is available now from Radio Liberty. Going into, of course, the drug smuggling out of Vietnam during the Vietnam War. Anyway, I share your concern and this autocratic idea that the government knows what's best for us and. But is this really true? I mean, they've taken so many drugs off the market. You know, somebody will be playing basketball and keel over dead, and, well, they've taken some sort of a pill. That must have been why they died. They don't know why they died at all. But they use it to take a lot of these very, very, and many times very, very beneficial drugs off the market and leaving ones that are quite deadly on the market. And I think that we really cannot trust government officials because so many of them are on the take from the drug companies. In fact, recently the head of the FDA agreed to a fine of $50,000 for lying when he got his job, and I think he was eventually relieved of it, but he isn't going to go to jail because he used his position to favor the companies he was affiliated with. He lied about having stock. Frankly, lied. If you and I lied, we'd go to prison. I mean, that's what happened to Martha Stewart. When a government official lies, why, of course, they usually give him a bonus and promote him. And this happens over and over again, and so can we really depend upon these people to look after our health? Well, Liz, what can the average individual out there do? Faced with what you know and what I know, what can they do to begin to inform other people and then to put an end to this before everything we do is regulated and controlled?
Well, there's the key, Dr. Stan, to tell as many people as you can what's going on. Share with them this information. You have some excellent books at your website. Of course, our book. I mean, people have always known there's something going on, but they haven't been able to put their finger on it, you know? And, you know, we both have evidence that there is something else going on, and people need to have that in front of them to know. It's a grassroots effort, because certainly mainstream television, they're very reluctant to tell the whole story the way that we're telling it, because, of course, they're beholden to their advertisers. So it's going to take each one of us to do that. And not only educate, you know, your immediate family, people in your church, your place of worship, your friends, your neighbors, your children, and take a stand. Please use cash whenever you can when you go shopping to help preserve your anonymity and say no to those databases. You know, credit cards are just a deadly way to give away information. And of course, the whole plan right now, as far as we can tell, is to get rid of cash, to stop anonymous purchases.
Oh, they've got this, I don't know if you've seen this ad, it's on television, it shows this this restaurant and everything is just working so well, and the fellas are flipping the things, the cooks are flipping the things off of the stove over their shoulder, and it's landing on the plates of the waiters, and of course everybody's going through this long line, and of course paying for the products they're buying with a Visa card or a plastic card, and you can just see that how busy and hustling it is. And then some fellow comes up to pay his bill for his lunch, and he's paying with cash.
Right.
Have you seen that?
Yes, and it makes it look like the guy who's paying with cash is old-fashioned and annoying because he's holding up the line.
Right, and everything comes to a stop. And then, of course, then as soon as he goes on and everybody's frowned at him because he's paying with cash, then everything begins to hum and get right back again. And, you know, it is such a clever ad, and they use those ads to control our reality. If everybody would simply go to the cashless system, wouldn't it be wonderful?
Right, and that's why they're doing these new swipe cards, these cards that are, you know, have RFID in them. So they are encouraging people, rather than digging into their pockets purchases under $25, which most people do, they dig into their pockets and pay cash. They're trying to encourage people to not even open their wallets or purses, just wave it right by the reader that's at the cash register, because that gives them insight into even the little things that you buy. They want to know everything about you so they can sell you more and so they can sell the tape too.
And so I certainly think so they can actually control you. Because they know what you're thinking. They know exactly how you respond, what you buy, what you're using. If you're buying things for other people, and, of course, the time will come when I believe that people will neither be able to buy nor sell. You know, of course, they have some sort of an electronic gauge, and that is how you have a dictatorship in America, and that's how you will have a dictatorship in the whole world. Because the whole world is wired now. That was the one reason for why 2K was to get the whole world connected by Internet and certainly by electronic communication. And now, of course, all throughout the world, you know, in every place where there's a civilized society, why they have their, credit cards. And you go back and you read Edward Bellamy's book. Looking backward, it was written in 1880. Edward Bellamy was part of this movement, and he said that, you know, the time would come, and looking back for the year 2000, when a credit card would be just as good in Europe as gold once was. How did he know that in 1880? Well, ladies and gentlemen, some of the people who truly do have supernatural knowledge, and it doesn't come from the God that we worship. Well, Liz, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, Dr. Stan, thanks for having me on again, and I encourage everybody out there, if you get the information that we're talking about, go to our website, spychips.com. I encourage you to get a copy of our book, Spychips, read it. It will give you a good handle on what's going on, that thing you can't put your finger on, you know, that thing you know that's going on. Somebody out there is trying to get my information or spy on me, and by golly, we've caught them red-handed with their hands in the people-backing cookie jar with all their plans, and so... please do that, and please tell your friends and neighbors about RFID. Please stand up, fight against that by not shopping at stores like Walmart that are supporting the RFID agenda. We ask that you reconsider buying products from companies like Procter & Gamble and Gillette that are pushing the spy chip agenda. And certainly, if you see products with these RFID tags on them, we say bypass those and buy products that are spy chip free.
Well, what about this group that is fighting the RFID identification of animals? Do they have a website or any place?
They really do. And you know what? I'm going to be at their rally March 2nd here in Austin. But the Farm and Ranch Association, I can get you that website. And, of course, Liberty Ark is another really good one that talks about National Animal Identification System. It's a fabulous resource if you're interested in learning more about this plan. In fact, here's the website now. Here's one,
www.farmandranchfreedom.org. Farmandranchfreedom.org, right?
That's a good one, and libertyark.org.
Okay, fine. And go to these websites. Get the information. Write to your legislators. Let people understand. They want everybody numbered. They want every animal numbered. They want every car numbered. They want every product numbered. Why would they want to do that? Because they want to control everything. And once you understand that, it really begins to make sense. If you look at it from a logical point of view, you'd say, this is crazy. Or it must be just going to be convenient. If you look at it from the point of view of the people who really do look at the world differently, who want to be able to control, who believe that they have been deemed by the God they worship to be able to control the common folks, why, of course, this increasingly makes sense. So I encourage you to follow through with what Liz has been talking about. Get their book, Spy Chips. And we carry the book because we think it's a very important book. And if you'd like to get copies of this interview or other interviews we've done with Liz or with Catherine or interviews with people who are working with the farm issues, why, we'll be glad to provide them for you. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. You have to be involved, and you have to be involved now. Good night. God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Liz, are you still there?
I'm here.
Well, good night. God bless you. Thanks so much for coming on late at night here.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, fine. And our guest has been Liz McIntyre. And we always enjoy Liz coming on. She's always willing to give up her time to try to get the information out. So if you haven't read their book, Spy Chips, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a copy of this interview or some of the other interviews we have with Catherine or with the other people who are dealing with the animal identification, give us a call, and you can get them through my ministry. 1-800-544-8927. If you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. You need to start passing it out. And you need to get people to understand that there are sinister spirits or forces that are energizing people who are doing these terrible things. And because you say, well, and whoever got hurt by a spy chip? Well, what they really want is control. These people want to eliminate most of the people in the world. Starve them to death, give them diseases. People say, oh, that couldn't be true. You need to get my talk on planned population reduction. It has all of the documentation there that's planned population reduction. And then, of course, we do hope many of you will certainly want to get the information going into the background of the AIDS epidemic. Certainly my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, but certainly the book entitled Project Daylily, written by one of the most eminent scientists of our time, going into the background of all the new diseases that have been created to inflict humanity today. Why would they want to create new diseases? Because they hate humanity. In fact, if you read the book written by Zygmunt Brzezinski, one of the leaders of the what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness, he created the Trilateral Commission. Their logo, and you can go to their website at trilateral.org and look it up. It's a circle, and if you look very closely, you'll see the three sixes joined together in the middle by an upside-down broken cross. And in a book Zygmunt Brzezinski wrote in 1970 entitled Between Two Ages, in one of the footnotes he talks about how in the future they're going to be able to create new diseases, chronic disabling diseases, and storms and droughts. Gee, I wonder if they really are creating storms and droughts today and maybe even controlling the weather? Well, anyway, there are lots of fascinating things going on. And, of course, we have many programs on this sort of thing. Certainly go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our programs 5 hours a day by the Internet. These are live programs we do. And, of course, you can listen to my Radio Liberty programs 3 hours a day at RadioLiberty.com. And the programs there are archived at MP3 if you can't listen to them live. You can listen to our shortwave 4 hours a day. You can listen to satellite 9 hours a day and not get anything accomplished at Telstar 5. And if you need information on that, you can go to our website and learn where to get an inexpensive satellite set, a dish, and a receiver. But we do hope that you'll want to join us in this truly spiritual battle, because behind everything that's going on are powerful spiritual forces. Now, as I said at the beginning of the program, I'm firmly convinced that in all likelihood we will be at war with Iran within a relatively few months. Whether it'll be a simply a limited war or a major war, who only knows? Heaven only knows. And of course, when a war starts, you never know how it's going to end. The people of Europe never thought that the First World War would amount to much of anything. They thought it would be over in a month or two. And 4 bloody years later, and 21 million people dead, and 40 million casualties later, why, the war did come to an end. And the Second World War was even far more bloody. 50 to 60 million dies there, and twice as many casualties. And the Third World War, what I fear is being planned today, can be far worse. Begin making your plans accordingly. Understand behind this are powerful spiritual forces. Make sure you understand who your allegiance has to be to, because the only thing that you're going to get you through what's coming is your personal relationship with our Lord. Get Cary Ten Boom's wonderful book, The Hiding Place. It's available through Radio Liberty at 1-800-544-8927. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our protection. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you once again from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, but please hold them until we ask for calls, because with us this evening is our second guest, Ron Brown, who Ron supports Radio Liberty, and we support Ron Brown. We think he's an honest man. He deals in gold and silver. He's been at this, 25 or 28 years? How long have you been at it, Ron?
About 28 years.
Okay, well, and of course, certainly, is there an increasing interest in the precious metals at the present time?
Oh, yes. It's in the last 2 years, it slowed down for a little bit when they crashed the market back in May, but it's returning very quickly right now.
Well, of course, I know that you're quite optimistic as far as the silver situation is concerned. How can they possibly be able to keep the price of silver down as effective as they have when there are really shortages in this? Are they mining enough to keep up with it? Are they running out of silver? I mean, they used to have massive, massive quantities of silver there in the various storages. The government had, a billion ounces or more. But what about now? Are there really shortages in the silver supply? Are they able to come up with other things like digital photography where you don't need the silver?
Well, we've been consuming our seed corn, in effect, for the last 50, 60 years. In 1963, when Lyndon Johnson demonetized silver, took it out of our coinage, the rest of the world followed suit. And it's estimated that the governments of the world dumped somewhere around 8 billion ounces of silver into the industrial market, which glutted the world with silver, and we've been consuming that seed corn for the last 50, 60 years. We're now getting down to where we're close to the bottom of the barrel. Most people who study it say you couldn't come up with 1 billion ounces if you had to. So that's way down from 8 to 10 billion ounces. My guess, Dr. Stan, is that as we go into the next leg down in this dollar decline, then that's going to reflect a flight out of the dollar, and therefore the monetary demand for silver will continue to accelerate. And at that point, we'll see the shortages in silver start to manifest.
I was interested to see that down in Mexico, why they're making it. If you are a Mexican and you want to buy silver coins, of course, you can actually buy them and leave them in your bank so that you don't have to worry about storing them. Have you run into that story?
I've heard about a lot of the Mexican politicians are pushing to remonetize silver in Mexico, of course. Better believe the bankers and the manipulators won't allow that to happen, but there is an effort to do that.
Now, Chris, the reason that they won't allow it to happen is because they've got us using their paper money, which they can create out of absolutely nothing. If we were on a gold and silver standard, they would be able, of course, to create money out of nothing and then have the audacity to charge us interest on money they've created out of nothing. It's one of the greatest scams in the world. And most people are totally unaware of what's going on, but history tells us, whether it be ancient Greece or ancient Rome or ancient Florence or ancient Venice, it's been tried, time and time and time again down through the centuries, and it's always failed. And I think it's about to fail now. What do you think?
I think the dollar system as we know it is in its terminal stage. We keep reading more and more about how the deficits are exploding beyond imagination. I keep hearing figures of $3 to $4 trillion a year in deficits. When it starts going that fast, something's going to give pretty quick, because you can't run the printing press quick enough to keep that going without destroying the credibility of the money itself, and that's what's happened.
Because they told us that the deficit this last year was $241 billion, and they were just playing liar.
Exactly.
Well, Ron, why don't you pick up the story there, and certainly we can talk a little bit. You were telling me about some article that you'd written, read. I tried to track it down. I couldn't track it down today, but what was that one all about?
Well, you know, Dr. Stanton, you and I have been talking for the last year, 2 years, about the coming real estate bubble burst, and there's becoming more and more. You know, if you get on the net now, you just find article after article going through all the problems in the real estate and market. And the article I was referring to was actually written by Jim Willey, and it was on gold-eagle.com. And man, he's just reading a horror story about what is starting to happen to the whole construction industry. You know, we're hearing more and more reports about subprime lenders that are going belly up or losing massive amounts of money. According to him, of all the banking system assets, 40% are tied to either mortgage-backed securities or home loan portfolios. So he's now suggesting that the banking system is about to get into deep trouble because of the demise of this real estate bubble. So I think everyone can see it everywhere that at the very least, housing prices are getting very soft. Is that happening in California?
Yeah, well, right where I live, I think they probably leveled off a little. They haven't started to fall yet because we live in a very, very desirable place. But certainly up in Sacramento, I think their housing prices are down about 18%. But we know there are two major industries in the United States. The two largest industries are the automotive industry and the housing industry. And, of course, the automotive industry is simply moving offshore. They've either bought out most of their employees or laid off most of their employees. And both Ford and General Motors and Chrysler are moving to China. And with that will come the end of the demise of the automotive production in the United States. We probably will keep some Toyota and Honda plants here. But the profits from those don't stay in the United States. They go directly back to Japan. But certainly with the automotive industry in decline and the housing industry across America collapsing, many places is down 18-20%. The housing stocks of those people who have big builders, many of those are down at 30-40% here in the last 6 to 9 months. Have you run into that?
I've been reading about that. There's just so much material out there pointing to the problems in this real estate bubble.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Ron is talking about the real estate bubble. And what happened was that, of course, we had interest rates down about 1%. And so it was very easy to borrow money, and a lot of people borrowed it on adjustable rate mortgages. And a lot of people were borrowing money that never should have been given loans because they did not have enough income to pay the monthly payments when the adjustable rate mortgages actually increased. And that's exactly what's happening today. And then now as the adjustable rate mortgages increase, the monthly payments, and the value of the house that they bought begins to drop, an awful lot of these people are simply going to walk away from the homes that and of course they're going to be trying to find some place to live. But the whole idea that we could create a society where everybody could have a luxurious home bought with money that did not exist, was artificially created, it's just a lunacy. The system just doesn't work. What happened was, of course, they began to see inflation. They had to raise the interest rates and went from 1% up to about 5.25%. And then, more recently, they've driven the interest rates down just to try to ward off a collapse of the housing market, so that actually the housing interest rates have fallen again. But they're not going to stay down that long, and I'm very, very concerned that we're going to begin to see some real signs of inflation, and they're just going to have to raise those interest rates again. And when they do, an awful lot of people are going to lose their homes. What are your thoughts on it?
Just to fill in the blanks of what you were talking about, going back to this article, the Center for Responsible Lending just estimated that 2.2 million homeowners will lose their homes to foreclosure. And just the last 2 years, one out of five subprime mortgage customers will lose their homes, and that amount about 1.1 million homes right there. You know, when we had the dot-com bubble going back in the 90s and then the real estate bubble, everyone talked about the wealth effect of these booming markets because everyone was getting richer just because their housing was going up or their stock portfolio was going higher, and that made them feel richer so they could go out and spend more and build bigger houses and so forth. But no one wants to talk about the wealth effect when the thing goes the other direction. 70% of our economy is geared to consumption. Here's one other point this article made. From the early 1990s, a 10-year period, the amount of money that was made in equity loans, in other words, withdrawn from the equity on house on a quarterly basis, increased over tenfold. So you'd have to say that much of the consumption boom of the last 10 years has been from people just withdrawing the equity from their houses. Now they're borrowed up to the hilt, and all you need now is not houses to drop necessarily. If they just stop going up in value, then people will lose that piggy bank that they can go to and withdraw money every year, 2 years, 3 years to keep the spending game going. So this whole bubble is running into trouble, and it's getting harder and harder for the monetary authorities to keep it from collapsing.
And I think really what people have to understand is that as the value of houses goes down, and the people that I rely upon, who I think are a lot smarter than I am, they're talking about the value of homes going down 30 to 40 to 50%. And as that goes down, why, of course, you owe a lot more on your house than it actually will bring on the market. And then again, to continue putting money, paying the monthly payments on a home that is worth far less than the amount of money you owe on it. And I think an awful lot of people are just going to do the logical thing. They're just going to walk away from that mortgage. Why hang on to a home that its value is going down, not up?
I haven't read an awful lot about it, but new bankruptcy procedures, it's a little harder to just walk away, isn't it?
It really is, of course. They knew exactly what was going to happen. This whole thing was calculated by the people who lay out the rules of the game. The way the rules work is we win, you lose. And that's why they modified the bankruptcy laws about 2 or 3 years ago, knowing full well the end result of the game that we're playing. It's like playing musical chairs. You got 20 people playing, you got two chairs. And when the music stops, you got 18 people standing there looking for a chair, and there aren't any chairs. Well, there are two chairs, and people are sitting in those chairs. Maybe people even sit on their laps, but there's no place for you to go. And that's how this monetary game has been played down through the ages. As the people of great wealth who created money out of nothing get people head over heels into debt. And it's really so much fun, and you get into debt, and you invest that money, and you can make a lot more money, and you get to be fabulously wealthy, and then you live next door to Barbra Streisand or something like that. But eventually, when the music stops and the money stops coming in, then how do you make the monthly payments on that house next to Barbra Streisand? And then, of course, you simply lose everything, plus the initial equity that you have. And that has happened time and again. You need to only read the history of America, what happened when the first bank of the United States failed in 1811. And, of course, what did they do? Why, we got the War of 1812. And then, of course, we had the collapse of the second bank of the United States in 1836. Well, we didn't have a war at that time, but they've used these techniques over and over again. And my fear is that they're looking for another major war. Of course, we had the Great Depression, 1930s, and the only way we got out of that was the Second World War. And I really fear that the only way we're going to get out of the mess that they've created now will be World War III. So these people, long-range planning, they know exactly where they're going. They just don't want the people to know, and the mothers whose sons are going to be set off to fight in senseless wars and sacrificed on the altar of these people who are manipulating things behind the scenes. And certainly my fear is that we're moving rapidly towards a war of the Rand, which may very well correspond with the coming financial chaos. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like to give us a call, and of course those of you who are watching what's going on over in Iran will know that we have one carrier group in the Persian Gulf a second one, the John Stennis, will be there very, very shortly. We have the Boxer Strike Force there, and the Boxer itself looks like an aircraft carrier, a big, long, flat deck, but it takes, you know, a small cargo plane, and of course it takes helicopters. They can land massive numbers of Marines or soldiers. Why do we have massive numbers of Marines and soldiers on ships off the coast of Iran and the Persian Gulf today? Why, for the same reason, we bring all those Patriot missiles into Iraq. We're certainly not going to use those against the insurgents. These are anti-missile devices, anti-missile weapons. Obviously, somebody's going to be firing weapons into Iraq at our soldiers, and we want to prevent them from doing the damage. I wonder who their planning will be, firing those missiles into Iraq. Are they planning maybe Osama bin Laden hiding in a cave? Or maybe Iran? Everything is in place for a war. Except the American people don't want a war. The Congress doesn't want a war with Iran. The Iranian people don't want to go to war. Except maybe President Ahmadinejad, who I think is playing his part very well. But I believe the current administration is determined to rescue their presidency by going to war with Iran. And what do you think in effect would be? What are you hearing about a war, Ron?
Well, I'm not an expert following it, but I hear it all the time, the rumblings. And when you look at the monetary situation, the oil situation, you know, Iran is threatening to break away from accepting dollars. So the one thing the U.S. bankers can't allow is for the world to reject the dollar as the reserve currency, because that's allows us to borrow from the world to fund our folly. As you pointed out many times, we need, what, $3.5 billion a day of foreign capital coming in just to pay the interest on our debt. So we're getting backed into a corner where the world is trying to reject the dollar, and of course we need the oil over there desperately too. So it's hard to imagine something not happening over there. It's frightening to think, if you add that on top of what we already have going with Iraq and with all the other monetary problems we have now, what is the deficit going to be like if we go into war there?
Well, you know, I think the most interesting thing, and I think we talked about this last time we talked, Ron, was the fact that the Bush administration proudly announced that the deficit this year was down to only $241 billion. Because he didn't have a deficit at all before, with the wicked spendthrift of Bill Clinton was in the White House, but they've got it down from about $400 billion to $241 billion. But it's, you know, the old saying, figures don't lie, but liars can sure figure. The trouble is that they had to put out an honest appraisal, not the one that they give to the common folks, but the Congress had demanded they put out one based upon not money in and money out, but what their actual responsibilities are, and of course with the accrual of, and I think they call it accrual account, I'm not certain, but
that's a generally accepted accounting method, is accrual accounting.
And of course, with that in mind, the deficit was over $4 trillion for 1 year.
Cash accounting, as I understand it, I took a little accounting in college, but cash accounting is like going down and buying a $100,000 Mercedes, putting $10,000 down payment on it, and on your books you showed that you spent $10,000. In reality, you've created an obligation for another $90,000. So that's what they've done with this. They just use cash accounting to report the deficit, and what they don't include is all the accrual and all the obligations they've created with all these new programs that they're developing.
And of course, this is, of course, a Medicare drug bill. This is Medicare. This is, of course, the Social Security, and we're having the baby boomers begin to retire at 62 next month. And, pardon me, I should say in next year, in 2008. And, of course, so they should then be putting money aside, figure investing at 6%, so they'd be able to provide them with their retirement money. But if they did that, it would take just for this 1 year, well over $4 trillion, which they do not have. There's no way to get it. We're a bankrupt nation, ladies and gentlemen. They just haven't told you yet. Well, Ron, do you think most people have any idea of really the dangerous situation we're in financially?
No. Now, the people I deal with are starting to wake up to it and call me, and you know, what I do is more of an educational process to try to bring people up to date on what's really going on. You know, if you think about it, every person who goes through college for the last 75 years has learned a brand of economics called Keynesian economics, and it basically tells you that the deficits don't matter, and that gold is an obsolete thing that's no longer necessary in sophisticated society. So that's their whole paradigm. They don't understand Austrian economics that says if you don't have money based on something that's solid and real, then the system will collapse. And as you pointed out earlier, all fiat systems in the history of the world eventually go to zero, and yet you look at all these brilliant people on Wall Street, totally miseducated. You know, I remember when I went through my economics at LSU, and something just didn't seem right about it, but who am I to question this college professor who's been around for 30, 40 years and tenured, you know? So you just kind of take it in, and then you lead your whole life that way, and then it becomes, if you dare to wake up and try to break away from it, then you become politically incorrect. Can you imagine working for a bank, being a hard money economist? You'd get fired real quick, or a stockbroker. So most people just go along to get along, and before they know it, they just live the life, and they don't really understand the reality of what's about to slap them upside the head.
Well, you know, if you really look at the forecast by so many of our major banks today, they're guardedly optimistic for this coming year, whereas, of course, if you read the people that I read, people like Jim Steins, who I think is a very, very astute individual, or certainly the fellow who writes Richard Mayberry, who I think is certainly one of the best economists. And these people certainly are saying that we're in for it's a terrible time this coming year. Certainly, both of them think that there's going to be a war and he'll do well in military stocks, and that may very well be true. But I think people have to get themselves into a defensive position and then realize the implications of an expanded war in the Middle East, because if Iran were to respond to an attack, what would they do? Well, they would try to hurt America. They would try to attack our troops in Iraq. They would try to knock out the oil facilities in the Persian Gulf. And, of course, it would be very, very susceptible to attack. And, of course, they could cut off very readily then the oil supplies from Saudi Arabia. They could destabilize Saudi Arabia and even lead to a revolt there, because a lot of people in Saudi Arabia hate the royal family that we've kept in power, a corrupt feudal society that American politicians have kept in power ever since the days of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, when, of course, the president and the king of Saudi Arabia at that time on the yacht, the Quincy, which was the official government yacht, made the agreement that if they would provide oil for the United States, we would keep this corrupt government in power. We've done it ever since then. But should we think about doing what's right, or should we think about what benefits us? And that is ready oil from Saudi Arabia. And, you know, I believe that the time is going to come when we're going to pay for the devil's bargain. And it could be very, very soon, especially if we go to war with Iran in the near future. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Ron Brown. If you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment on what we're talking about, of course, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I was simply commenting that if we do go to war with Iran, and we're talking about within a couple of months, the figures we're getting, whether they're accurate or not, but we get them from a number of people. I mean, some of them we know are active with the intelligence agencies, and others who have contacts that are fairly reliable. Everybody seems to think that the war is coming very, very soon. Of course, they're going to have an incident to justify it, because the Congress doesn't want to go to war with Iran. The American people don't want to go to war with Iran. But the administration wants to go to war with Iran. After all, you know, if they could pull off a war with Iran and they could win that war, it would save the Bush presidency. And his legacy would go down and he'd be a great hero. The only trouble is he's never thought what would happen if we lost the war with Iran. What would happen, you know, if suddenly the price of oil went to, you know, $100 a barrel, $150 a barrel, $200 a barrel. Is that a possibility, Ron?
Absolutely. You know, if the scenario you just discussed, if Iran cut off the oil, cut off the Saudi Arabia oil. Plus, we're using more oil to fight a war. Yeah, you could see the price of oil and gasoline just go literally through the roof, and it would hit an already crippled economy we have in the U.S. At the same time, you better believe that Iran and their allies and friends would start cutting off the U.S. from borrowing money. So things could hit us, upside the head and just knock the whole country for a loop. And by the way, I think that would also fit into the obvious plans that are being discussed pretty regularly now, and that is for a new currency. You know, anyway, you got it. If you really sit down and look at our budget and our debt system, our nation is bankrupt beyond any hope of ever coming out of it. So that means eventually this fiat system we've been on since 1913, this Federal Reserve system, is going to go belly up, and they will replace it with a new system. And, of course, that's part of the game plan of the international bankers, because every time you have a monetary crisis and a reform, they consolidate power. So I'm sure you've read. Do you have much information about the new Amero on your website?
Well, we don't actually have gone into that, but we know that certainly Robert Pastor, who is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and is certainly one of the architects of this whole idea of North American Union, has advocated something called the Amero, which is, of course, a common currency for Mexico, the United States, and Canada. This is what they plan. They plan to do away with the sovereignty of our nation, to unite the United States with our neighbors, and to raise the living standard to the average American to that of the Mexican peasant. And people say that could never happen. And I would ask, why couldn't it happen? If God is just, do you think he's not going to bring his judgment upon this country? And I believe he is. But even if you don't believe in God and you don't believe God's justice, look and see what's happening. Understand that we are the most powerful nation in the world. We're also the greatest debtor nation in the world. And, of course, we're antagonizing everyone in the world. We are already at war with Iran, for all intents and purposes. We put sanctions on Iran that are hurting this government, which really is not a wealthy government. They still have to import about 40% of their gasoline, even though they're one of the largest oil exporters in the world. They don't have the infrastructure, because we have had them under embargo as far as trade is concerned, going back to the Iran hostage crisis in 1979, and they hate us. They believe we've kept them from advancing, and now we're trying to keep them from getting atomic power. Now, maybe trying to build a bomb, I don't know. Maybe the government is correct. Maybe they're trying to build a bomb, but if they are, according to the CIA, it'll be 5 to 10 years before they will be able to do that. And the Bush administration says, our intelligence agencies don't know what they're talking about. We're a lot smarter. We've got to go to war. We've got to go to war right away. And when you hear this certain urgency being expressed by the administration and Dick Cheney, oh, we've got to go to war, understand we're already at war with Iran. When you put sanctions on a nation, when you deprive them of their ability to obtain funding from banks throughout the world and put pressure on banks to not deal with them, this is an act of war. It's about time the American people began to understand, when you launch a war, you never know how that war is going to end up. As we pointed out, certainly when the First World War began, it was only a minor incident, the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand. They thought it would be over in a few weeks. It ended up with the destruction of Germany, Austria-Hungary, Turkey, and the Russian Revolution. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here again. Our guest is Ron Brown, and Ron, of course, is a good friend who actually sells gold and silver. And now, certainly, are most people buying gold or buying silver at the present time, Ron?
Well, the ones that call me, as you know, I'm such a raging bull on silver. I pretty much talk people into buying silver, and I've been pretty effective at that, because when you really sit down and look at the silver story, you know, to me, it's a once-in-a-world history phenomenon that's happening. Never again in the history of the world will we consume in 60 years the silver that took 4,000 years to accumulate. So it's a once-in-a-lifetime, a once-in-a-world history phenomenon, and once you explain that to people, then they see the big picture.
Well, how high do you think silver could actually go right now? It's about almost at $13. I think it can go to $50 or to $100 or even higher.
Well, think back to 1979. Well, in fact, go back to 71. Silver was $1.29 in 1971. And then started in about 1978, silver hit, $200 in 1976. But in 1979, gold went from $200 to $870. Silver went from $5 in January of 79 to $52 an ounce just a year later. So here we are 27 years later. We probably have 20 times as much bogus paper money sloshing around the globe with all the liquidity that's been pumped into the monetary systems worldwide. Yet we've been consuming silver at a deficit for 23 or 24 out of the last 27 years. So we probably have at best one-fourth as much silver to go around with 20 times as much paper money to chase it. So if silver went to $50 in 1980, where do you think it could go this time?
I don't know. You're going to have to tell me. What do you think?
Here's what I think is about to happen, Dr. Stan. I think we're in the terminal stage of this dollar system. We've seen the first down leg of the dollar went from 121 on the index down to 80. You and I talked about that many times. That was about a 40% drop in the value of the dollar over, what, a 3-4 year period?
Right.
Then the bankers and the governments came around the world to shore up the dollar, because the one thing all the international bankers don't want to see is the dollar collapse overnight, because they're too tied into the system. They're in the same lifeboat with us whether they like it or not.
So you're going to have to hold that thought for just a minute as we bring other stations right on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Ron Brown. And I was asking Ron, you know, how high he felt that silver could go, and what he thought was going to happen. And, of course, he's saying that, first, the value of the dollar is falling. He thinks that we're in the terminal stages of the dollar, which means that all the people who've invested everything and is tied to the dollar are in jeopardy of losing the majority of everything they have, whether it be in annuities or in pensions or in CDs or certainly in bank deposits or anything that is specifically tied to the dollar. Could get into a very real problem literally within a matter of a few weeks, and sometimes even overnight, when they'll suddenly close all of the banks and then, of course, declare a bank holiday, as they did during the Roosevelt administration. So you pick up the story there. You were just saying that certainly the central banks of the world have been trying to rescue the dollar, keep it from just collapsing suddenly. So pick up the story there, Ron.
Yeah, they've been trying to support, and that's the second leg of what we call an Elliott Wave move. So they've been trying to prop up the dollar to keep it from collapsing, but now everything is looking like it's about to go into another tailspin, break through that major, major support level of 80 on the dollar index. Now, once that happens, when I say they're going to break through, the powers to be will try to prop it up, so you may see it bounce off of that level two or three times before it literally breaks through. But once it breaks through that 80 level on the dollar index, you're going to see a psychological change, and the dollar will go into a dramatic downdraft, which will represent a flight out of dollars into something else. Now, that money that's fleeing from the dollar worldwide, is part of it at least, will be going into gold and silver. And that's the one thing the markets can't tolerate, because there's very little gold and much less silver to go around once the monetary demand starts to accelerate. Well, I suspect very quickly, once this dollar breaks down, you're going to see the surge of demand in silver and gold, but the shortages of silver that we've literally been talking about for 15 to 20 years will suddenly start to manifest and show up, and at that point, everything will start to happen very, very quickly. All these international bankers who've been manipulating the price of silver through the futures market and all these derivatives, in my feeling, that once the physical shortages show up, they will in effect trump all those manipulation scams, and they will evaporate, which will then force these bankers to cover their short position In other words, the paper contracts they've sold with no silver to deliver against them, which would be like throwing gasoline onto a fire, because now you're throwing massive buying into an already tight market. At that point, silver will be outperforming gold rather dramatically, and there's going to be an awful lot of people that have avoided gold or silver in the past because it was too bulky, and they're going to start waking up to this silver story I've been talking about, and they're going to say, I need to switch a little of my gold into silver to take advantage of this massive run-up. And that's when that's going to be the trigger mechanism, because the real crisis is that we've consumed all the silver over the last 50 years. There literally is much more gold above ground today than there is silver. But if you take a look at it from a market cap standpoint, in other words, the value of all the gold in the world that could possibly come into the market, and compare that to the value of all the silver in the world that could possibly come into the market, you'll find that the market cap for gold is 200 to maybe 300 times the market cap for silver. So think about it, Dr. Stan. If just 1% of the money in gold dare to try to get into an already tight silver market because of what was going on, 1% of the money in gold would literally triple the market value of all the silver overnight. So where do I think silver is going to go? I think $50 to $100 an ounce over the next 12 to 24 months, since things typically take a little longer than you expect. Give it 36 months. But if it took 36 months to make 10 times on your money, that's not all bad.
All right, fine. Well, why don't you just get your telephone number out and your website so people would know how to get in touch with you.
Well, I don't have a website, but my telephone number is 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561.
All right, fine. And certainly you have some material you send out to people who call in, don't you?
Yes, I'll be glad to put a package together. And I want people just to feel comfortable calling me, because I feel more like a teacher sometimes than a salesman. So I try to educate people about what's about to happen to our country and our monetary system. So just feel free to call me at that number, and I'll be glad to send you a packet of information. And Dr. Stan, I'm going to sit down and make myself write a letter here this week. So I'll be getting another letter out. I haven't done one, as you know, in a couple of years.
I really enjoyed the last one. I thought it was very apropos. Well, our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment. But I really think that this war phenomenon that we see looming directly ahead of us, and of course, is it possible that maybe that they just try to collapse the Iranian government? Well, I think that the logic would be that with the way you'd want to do it. I mean, certainly if we would just hold off, I think that in a couple of years, and keeping the pressure on and the embargo on Iran, the whole thing would collapse. But I don't think they want that. I think that they want to expand the war. Everything I read, everything I know, and all of the historical influence and information we're getting suggests that there are people in the current administration who are intent upon ever larger war and ever larger casualties and ever larger expenditures of military equipment in the Middle East. And really, as a result of this, I fear that we're going to turn the entire Muslim world against us, and we're going to destabilize the Middle East and the Near East, and many of the existing governments there will be overthrown, and the implications for this are frightening. And of course, I believe, as you know, that President Ahmadinejad of Iran has been visiting within this last week. He was down in South America visiting with his friend Hugo Chavez, visiting with Daniel Ortega, the new president of Nicaragua, visiting with the new president of Ecuador, and establishing a non-aggression plaque so that if anything were to happen and America were to attack Iran, then of course their allies here could bring pressure on the United States. Remember now, of course, we're getting a fair amount of, I think well over a million barrels a day from Venezuela. What would happen if, of course, we lost our oil supplies from Saudi Arabia and from Venezuela? Now, you have to understand, in my estimation, that we have plenty of oil here in this country. We've been blocked for offshore drilling. We've been blocked from drilling government land. We've been blocked from having nuclear power. We've been blocked drilling up in the reserve in Alaska. We've been dropped from blocked from drilling in the massive oil fields that they have off the North Slope, and we've checked this story out. We believe it to be true. They have intentionally created this crisis situation to justify the coming war in the Middle East. And heaven help us if I'm right. Again, our telephone number, 1-8-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. I'd like to know what you think about the possibility of war, the implications as far as our country is concerned, economically, the price of oil, what would happen to the value of the dollar, and certainly, what's the dollar been doing now? It was down to about 82. Is it holding there? Is it going up or down from there, Ron?
Well, they've stepped in the last 3 weeks or a month to support the dollar, and they've got it up to 85 and change, I believe. By the way, that's an interesting point you bring up, because remember the last 3 or 4 years when gold was going up, but everyone was saying gold is going up simply because the dollar is dropping, and that was the primary thing that was going on. But in the last few months, the price of oil has gone from, what, 70-something dollars a barrel down to, what, 50?
50, 51, somewhere in there.
Right. You've seen the dollar being stabilized and showing some life to the upside. And yet gold and silver are not going down, which you would think would be happening if we're... And all the hype today about the commodity boom is over. Copper's gone from, what, $4 a pound down to $2.50. So here the commodity prices have come down. The dollar is stabilized. The oil price is down. So you would think gold would be coming down as well. But it's gold and silver are showing an awful lot of resilience, which tells me that there's something else the world is worrying about. And if you may have hit the button with this oil war in Iran, if we're going to go into war, that gold is going to go through the roof as a result of the fear over that. So I think the gold and silver is seeing something deeper than it's seen in the last 2, 3, 4 years. I think it sees something serious ahead, either a dollar collapse or war or something like that, and that's what it's reflecting.
Well, of course, we've often used the analogy of the canary in the mine shaft. When you're going down the mine shaft, you take a canary with you. And when the canary drops over, then, of course, you get out of the mine shaft in a hurry. You may not be able to smell the poison gas, but it'll kill the canary. Well, the same thing is true with price of gold and silver. When, of course, they go up, why, it means that there are really serious economic problems. And, of course, we don't know what is really going on behind the scenes. The people who do know are not going to tell us, but we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. But you watch the price of gold and silver, and the fact that gold is hanging right in there between 625 and where did it close today? Up on 638?
It got right up to 640, which, by the way, is a critical resistance level. It just says $13 on silver, which it got above $13 today. So every time you get to one of these major resistance levels, you can almost bet your boots that the bankers are going to come in and ambush the market some way, and selling will come into the market to drive it back down. They're fighting a losing battle. It'll eventually break through, and when it does, it'll explode to the upside. But they will try to put off that day of reckoning as long as they can, but I think they're running out of rabbits. There's just too much overwhelming news that's bearish for the dollar and bullish for gold for them to hold it back much longer.
Well, of course, the Federal Reserve System, they're really in sort of a pickle now. If they lower the interest rates, why, of course, they're going to encourage inflation. And inflation is much higher than we're being told. We're told it's 2 or 3%. It's really about 10%. But if they raise the interest rates, they'll destroy the economy. So what are they going to do?
Well, they're between a rock and a hard place. You know, that's the whole problem with the fiat system in Keynesian economics. It basically wants to keep a little bit of inflation going, because once you get this debt system built up to a certain level, then it becomes dangerous to ever allow a recession, which would contract the amount of money in circulation. And if that ever happens, people would default on their debt. But the higher the debt gets, the more critical it becomes. And let's face it, our debt is so massive now, they cannot, under any circumstances, allow a recession. And yet they have to do their best to maintain the credibility of the currency. So the way they do that is to go through motions of raising interest rates to try to convince the world they're serious about fighting inflation. But higher interest rates is not fighting inflation at all. Cutting back on the printing press is the way you fight inflation. Well, if you're raising interest rates with one hand, but out back door you're pumping money out the system faster than ever, and you're inflating, but you're trying to deceive the public about what's really going on, and that's what they do very effectively.
And, of course, what the people have to understand is that there's several ways of generating money. One is the turn of the printing presses. In the world today, there's something about $720 billion, something like that. That's the money in circulation out there. But then, of course, they create money by the fractional reserve system. And you only have to have about 10% of the actual cash on hand, and the rest of it is all paper entries. And that's how they're actually increasing the amount of money or credit money and credit out there about, you know, the 10 to 12% every year now. But that's why they quit printing the M3, which was, of course, the monetary increment that told you how rapidly they were increasing monetary supply of dollars throughout the world. And of course, now it's simply not only America that's doing that. Every country in the world is on a fiat money system. Japan has been creating money like it was going out of style, with interest rates of 1%, why people could go to Japan, put up some security, borrow $1 billion, and then bring that $1 billion over to the United States and invest it in our bonds. You borrow at 1%, you lend it out, and here in America at 4.5% or 5%, that's pretty good. That's what's known as the carry trade. But eventually, the day of reckoning is going to come. And of course, when that comes, why, of course, this whole house of cards is going to tumble. When I got started studying this, it was about $230 trillion in derivatives out there. These are gambles that are put out that the whole system will hold together, and that the stability of a currency. After all, if you borrow a Japanese yen and you're going to invest in American dollars, what happens if the American dollar falls? You're still going to come back with the same number of yen. You got to be able to borrow the yen. So if the dollar falls, you buy a derivative. Today there are over $370 trillion in derivatives. There's not that much money in the world. That's far more than all the value of all the countries of the world put together. And yet that's the derivative market. And as Warren Buffett said, derivatives are financial weapons of mass destruction, currently latent but potentially lethal. And I love that statement because I think it describes exactly what's going on. Financial weapons of mass destruction.
That's exactly, and what's even more tragic or scary is you have all these 35-year-old, 40-year-old mathematicians out of MIT, and they've got all their little calculations and formulas and computers, and when they see a risk, they come up with another derivative to protect you from the risk. But you know, it's like two people making a bet, and neither one of them has the money to pay off the bet. You may have a derivative that supposedly is going to protect you from a default on another investment, but if the people who issue that to you don't have the money to pay it off, then the whole system is going to just crack it's going to implode once this thing triggers.
Somebody just called and wanted to know about gold mutual funds. Are they a good idea?
Gold mutual funds?
Right.
Yes. They're a little more conservative way. The only thing I don't like about most of them is that most of them, see, there's so little gold and silver shares or companies out there that have any capitalization to them. So a lot of the mutual funds are invested in these blue chips, and a lot of these blue chips are the very companies that went out and sold forward their future production, which means they've sold gold they haven't mined yet, and yet they've sold it at a price, some of them at $300, $400 an ounce, and here's gold at $600 an ounce. So they're going to get hurt bad when the gold goes up because they're commit on these much lower priced gold. So that tends to slow down the growth in the mutual funds. They're too weighted down with these big corporations that aren't going to perform well in a gold move.
Well, I guess again it's been Ron Brown. Let's get your telephone number up one more time, Ron.
That's 1-800-595-0561. 1-800-595-0561.
Well, Ron, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. And whatever happened to Barricade? Suddenly, they were one of the big corporations that was selling forward. And they were doing that to work with the central bankers to drive down the price of gold artificially. They call it market manipulation, but of course, when you're working with the big boys, you would never go to prison for doing that. So what's happened to Barrick?
You know, I haven't read about it recently, but at one point, American Barrick was sold forward something like 12 to 13 years of their future production, and at the time they were producing about 4 to 5 million ounces of gold a year. They lost massive amounts on that short position, or that forward sold position, up in the 500, I think close to $1 billion. They tried to cover that up by buying out, I think, was it Placidone they bought up not too long ago?
I don't really remember.
Well, they kind of covered up and mingled the books. But, yeah, you still have a few of those companies like Anglo-American and some of those that are still sold forward. And that's really kind of, they've lost an awful lot of money as the gold rises. So they're still working out of it. So
whatever happened to that lawsuit against Barrick for being in conspiracy with some of the big banks and the Treasury Department to artificially manipulate the gold market? Whatever happened to that?
I don't think anything went of it. I knew it wouldn't. That's like having a trial in a kangaroo court, you know. they're not going to ever come through with anything serious on that. But there were some serious charges brought against not only American Barrick, but Goldman Sachs and some of the big bankers, and plus the Treasury. I can't even remember who the Secretary of the Treasury was at the time, but there was a lot of serious charges brought against him, and they just, of course, disappeared.
All right, fine. Well, of course, we've had so many of Secretaries of the Treasury there. Anyway, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Our guest has been Ron Brown, and we're simply talking about what's really going on behind the scenes financially. And our suggestion to you is, prepare for difficult times. I really believe that difficult times lay ahead. Get out of debt. Get your debts paid off so that you can secure your home and get enough so that you can make your payments on your house so you're going to have a place to live. And then over and above that, why, then think about investing. You may never get rich, but you want to protect what you have. I fear that an awful lot of people who are using the conventional methods of investing that they're going to talk to you about at the brokerage houses, so many of the people who follow that advice are going to end up becoming impoverished and living in poverty in what was once a very prosperous land. Good night. God bless.
Good to be with you, Dr. Ann.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much.
Hey, bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We always enjoy having Ron on and simply sharing our concern. And you're going to hear me talk about this war with Iran. Everything points that we're probably going to have a war with Iran because our leaders want a war with Iran. They don't need a war with Iran. But this is one way to rescue the Bush presidency. But even more than that, this has been planned for a long period of time. And if you go back and read George Bush's speeches about the angel that rides in the whirlwind and directs his storm. The angel that rides in the whirlwind and directs his storm. That's how he ends his first inaugural address on January 20th, 2001. And then he ends up the second inaugural address on January 20th, 2005, the next to the last paragraph, saying when our founders declared a new order of the ages, when our soldiers died row on row in pursuit of a liberty-based union based upon liberty, when our citizens marched in righteous outrage beneath the banner of freedom now, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. And when you understand the writings of the secret societies, they always put it together a sentence, with the first and the last part of the sentence telling you the true message and then putting a lot of hyperbole in the middle to confuse you. And what he really said was, when our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on the ancient hope that was meant to be fulfilled. What was the ancient hope? Why was the new order of the ages? What is the new order of the ages? Well, if you Google that in on your computer, it will come up, new order of the ages, Nova or Doros Forum. That's a pyramid capped by an all-seeing eye, a triangle that's hovering over the top of the unfinished pyramid, doing on the back of the dollar bill. It is the emblem of the ancient secret societies. If you doubt that, we have an interview with Professor Carol Quigley, one of the most eminent historians of modern times. in a talk, the interview that he gave to the Washington Post. You can actually hear him. If you just order the Professor Carol Quigley tape set, it's our 40-tape secret government tape set, he will tell you that emblem on the back of the dollar bill has been around for 6,000 years. What is it doing on the back of the dollar bill? Why, it represents the ancient goal of the ancient secret societies and of the mystery religions to bring about a one-world government and a new world religion. And that's really what this is all about. If you're looking for logic, logically, what are we doing in the Middle East? Oh, we went there, we had to catch the wicked Osama bin Laden. But we didn't catch the wicked Osama bin Laden, and we didn't try to catch the wicked Osama bin Laden. But we can't tell the American people we did not go into Afghanistan to catch Osama bin Laden. We have an article out of the Washington Times on October 7th. 2001, just 3 weeks after the 9/11 attack, where a high-ranking government official said, we're not going to try to get Osama bin Laden. Our motto is Osama bin Laden, not first but last. If we got Osama bin Laden, how would we justify this war? How would we justify this war? And how many boys have died in Afghanistan? And how many have died in Iraq? And how many are going to die when we go into Iran? You need to get our material. You need to get our three pamphlets on Foreknowledge 911. You need to get the set of videos we have on 911. We have five of them. You get all five of them at a reduced rate, or certainly you can get them separately. 911, Press for the Truth, 911 Mystery, Terror Storm, The In Plain Sight, and The Day That Changed America Forever. All of them are available from Radio Liberty. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, the Brotherhood of Darkness special, or the book and either the video or the audio tape. You can watch it on Google. Just type in Brotherhood of Darkness video at Google, and you can watch my talk. You, of course, may want to very well get the book so you can document what we're saying. But understand that what is taking place has nothing to do with Iraq or Iran or Osama bin Laden. It is part of the ancient plan of the ancient mystery religions. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. May the Lord be with you.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.